Hey everybody, welcome back to Deja View, your favorite Vue.js podcast. You just don't know it yet. Or maybe you do because, well, we're quite some episodes in already and maybe you've seen, well, where's Michael, right? If you haven't joined, usually it's podcast Michael and me doing, sometimes both of us, sometimes with some guests. And somehow Michael is not here today, and that's because he became a father recently. So congrats to him. He has a well-deserved break. And instead of Michael, I have someone else right to this side, wherever my finger's pointing on. And well, he's a speaker, he's a panel host, and also a full stack developer. Welcome everybody, Patrick van Everdingen.
Woo! That's a good pronunciation.
Thanks. Yeah.
Very good.
My Dutch is getting there at some point. So how are you doing, Patrick? Yeah. How are things?
Yeah, things are pretty well. I just got back from a short trip to Naples, Italy with my mom.
Lovely.
It was really great. Yeah, you always have so much fun in Italy. Good food, good weather, and it was good to be away from all the dreary gray weather that we have in Amsterdam right now.
Just want to say, like, looking outside, it's like cloudy, rained a few minutes before, like Italy, sunny, warm.
Yeah, good food. I mean, it's such a crazy difference from what we had like a couple of weeks ago. 24 degrees, it was the start of summer, apparently, but now it's all
back to winter.
to winter, yes.
Well, but that's how it's going sometimes. But okay. So today the two of us are here, and Patrick, you've been involved in lots of things. I mentioned before, okay, you gave a big talk in meetups, you were a panel host at the DevRel conference, so we saw each other there too, and you're also building a side project. So I've seen it, especially when you like hit your X profile, for example, it's like the first and maybe also the only link popping up there. So tell us a bit more what you're doing there.
Yeah, that's a very good question, Alexander. Yeah, I'm to start, I am a full-stack developer in Nuxt, but I'm also very passionate about career and personal development in regards to how do you advance your career, what can you do to improve yourself on technical interviews. And my passion for this topic started, I think, a year ago. When my girlfriend and I were on a holiday in Italy again.
I see a pattern, yeah.
And we talked about her work because she works as a real counselor, a personal development counselor at the university in Holland. And we talked about how can we help your students improve writing cover letters and resumes using generative AI. Yeah? It was the wave of generative AI. AI was everywhere. And we experimented a bit at the pool we were staying at the holiday house. We were doing some experiments with ChatGPT. And she was like, hey, this is a very good way, a very easy way to help students with their writing. Because if I'm honest, writing a good resume with the correct bullet points, using the correct ATS keywords, writing a good profile description about yourself, it's something that most people are not super good at, or they're not enjoying writing things about themselves. You know,
true.
Most of the people I know, my friends, when they're writing a resume, they write things as on their work experience, and they say like, I worked as a manager in this company, but you also need to list your achievements, list your responsibilities.
It shouldn't be too long or too short either, right? That's another thing. Like, it should hit the perfect length of all the achievements, and not like in 10 sentences, but bullet points. And yeah, I see the point.
And most people think, all right, a resume or a CV is a biography. You need to write everything you did in your entire life, but actually, it's not. It's a marketing tool designed to get the attention of a recruiter or a hiring manager. And this person has only 10 seconds to scan your resume briefly. So what generative AI is very good at, in my opinion, is writing these things based on the prompts you provide. So long story short, we found out that it's a really great way of empowering and helping students with writing cover letters and resumes. So the thing is, at first we wanted to build something that would look and resemble a Notion app a little bit. Our first MVP was a Word Notion-like clone that you could use to edit your cover letter. But we soon figured out, well, this is just a GPT wrapper. It calls the OpenAI API. and it gives a response, but everybody can do that. Everybody can go to ChatGPT and write their use their own prompts and write a resume and cover letter. So we wanted to expand this experiment, and it slowly started to turn from an experiment to a real product that we didn't intend to build, but
there you are.
What we're building. Yeah, it always goes like this. And what we built is a tool that helps you get a cover letter, a resume, but also help you prepare your job interview, help you with negotiating your salary. It's actually, it's a career platform where we aim to help you from the moment you find a job description or a job listing till the moment you signed your contract with the company. And this side project turned into a huge monster.
So many do, yeah, fair.
Yeah, this turned into a product that we're currently testing with an audience of about 50 testers. It's called CareerDeck, if you're interested.
Link is in the show notes, of course, very important.
Yes, put it in there, shameless plug. But it's really cool to start with a small MVP at the pool in Italy, and we now end up with something that we might see as a permanent side hustle. Yeah,
really nice. And like, two questions came up straight away from me, because they're like, okay, first, that notion like clone was like more of a GPT wrapper, and said you don't want that, because I mean, to be fair, especially with the whole like, hey, AI hype, we've seen so many like just GPT wrapper, and then when, I don't know, plugins came along and people developed more and more, all like these like businesses or side hustles slowly died. So what makes the platform, let's say, the app different than just a GPT wrapper?
That's an excellent question, Alexander. It's very good. So what our platform does differently are a couple of things. First of all, it uses retrieval augmented generation, a technique in large language models, to come up with answers based on a custom knowledge base. So what I like to tell to my friends at parties and birthdays, like, okay, I'm doing the technical procedures, building the entire application, but my girlfriend, who is a real expert in personal development and career coaching, she knows what to put in the prompt that we're sending to GPT. She knows what the first paragraph of your cover letter should look like, the second part. So we use our own markdown files, which contain all of the business logic, so to say. And we use that to generate content. So yes, our product is partially a GPT wrapper, but it uses a custom knowledge base. It uses web loaders, which means that we can turn a URL into a embeddings vector store. We use that to compare answers. We can even use that to give recommendations about job listings, if a job is good for you or might not be a good idea for you. So what I'd like to tell people, generative AI is a augmentation of a web app. That's my big philosophy. Use it to improve existing software. Use it to come up with content, but not just use the wrapper itself. Use it to augment your user experience. That's the thing, the important part. So what we're also doing is not just generating content on the fly for cover letters and resumes, but we're also providing our users the possibility to practice a job interview before you have to actual interview yourself.
Okay.
So this ties in with the concept of multimodality in AI, not just text and images that you can create with AI, but also use voice, generative voice samples to do things. So what we're actually doing is replicating what my girlfriend actually does for her job at the university. In there, she also performs mock interviews with her students. She helps them out with all kinds of things, prepare them for a certain role by acting as a certain manager in the company. So there's much more than just using GPT to generate documents. It's also possible to do all kinds of crazy things. And that's exciting.
It sounds like, yeah. I mean, also, I really sense you're really passionate about it, and that's always amazing. And I think in here, like, I think I want to highlight that it's very important. Like, it's a nice symbiosis of, like, somebody who's, like, an expert in a certain area, in this case, your girlfriend, and with someone who can use that knowledge and enable to, like, build a product with that. And I think that combination is, like, really valuable for people starting their own things, that, like, you have, like, one person ensuring that the technical side goes well and the other person ensuring, okay, awesome, but here's my domain knowledge, here's what I know, and to make that even bigger. Because, I mean, technically, how it sounds like right now, when, like, more training and with more data, even go further and say, okay, what your girlfriend's doing at university, then she could technically say, okay, students, here is the tool, fill it out, and for any questions, consult me. And that's, of course, way more scalable.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, I mean, she gives workshops and lessons, college lectures to a group of 10 to 20 students, but she has no time to help them out individually on their own. And she actually told some of her students, like, hey, go to our project and try to see what you can come up with and use that instead. And the feedback so far has been quite positive. There's always room for improvement. I'm also currently going through a major refactor. I'm actually building the entire application all over again because,
The tech debt got to real.
Sorry, what?
The technical debt got to real, or what?
Technical debt, but also there has been one big game changer that didn't cross my path when I initially started this whole journey. Last year in the summer when I started, I thought, well, let's build my own UI library. I can surely do that, right?
Yeah, of course. And then we end up with lots of more problems than before.
Yes. Let me come up with more states that you didn't foresee. Let me come up with all these abstractions I do not need. So I try to build a lot of things myself. I think it's a very enjoyable experience and you learn most out of it, but it also is a massive waste of time sometimes.
Time consuming for sure. Yeah, especially if you want to ship features. I understand it. Like, I don't know, I've worked in like dozen e-commerce shops and people's like, okay, we have our corporate design, things should go well. But even then, like, there might be some primitives you can use and then just style it, right? You don't have to reinvent the wheel again and again and say like, hey, it's a slider, a carousel again.
I started using a couple of UI libraries, experimented with them, but some of them were not really up to my taste, or I didn't really like design or the developer experience. So I think it was around 2 or 3 months ago when Nuxt UI came across my path. Of course, you know about it.
Here and there,
It is such a game changer. I can get stuff much quicker done than initially with my first UI monster. And not just the primitives and the components that are provided in the base Nuxt UI libraries, I'd say, but also the pro components are a huge time saver. I mean, if you have these things in marketing websites, you always end up roughly the same kind of things, a hero section, a logo, carousel pricing, and what our feedback was from our testers initially was, hey, we need, would like to see what CareerDeck does before I create an account and sign up and go through all this hassle. And Nuxt UI Pro just gave me that, like, hey, here's this thing you can build for your marketing page and get it up and running within an hour, literally. I was amazed how quickly this went.
Yeah, so, super happy to hear that. Like, we had Harlan on a couple episodes earlier, and he also said, like, yeah, for his, like, open source software as a service, he also used Nuxt UI Pro. I also tried a little bit here and there, and I can only agree it's really worth it. And at that moment, that's not planned at all, but there is a coupon code right now that Sebastian gave me a couple of days ago, which is just my last name, Lichter. It's also in the show notes again. Where you can get 20% discount on Nuxt UI Pro until the end of the month. So if you want to snag it, there you go. That's your chance.
Yeah.
Really worth it.
Go for it. It's. I was a bit skeptical at first. I thought, well, here we go. Another Shad CN or another Prime View. What's this next thing? But it's great. It's really great.
Especially if you use Vue and Nuxt, right? I mean, it's Nuxt UI. So maybe speaking more of the technical side, you already mentioned, okay, Nuxt UI, we already like got a bit into the detail. Tell us a bit more of the tech stack you used in general to build CareerDeck from like zero to where you are right now, or what you will use for the like big revamp and refactor. So I'm very curious about that.
I would say that the tech stack I use is in what I would call in my mind the happy Nuxt stack. Superbase, because it has all these nice things out of the box. Auth, database, Postgres, it's a blessing to work with. I use Nuxt, of course, Nuxt 3 with Nuxt UI, Tailwind. Yeah, all the, I would say, everybody uses this in tech land, let's say.
I mean, there are some people not liking it, but also as someone who follows Adam Weaven back to my Laravel times, I definitely second that. I still remember where it was just like a bunch of less files. Like whoever likes BEM more should use BEM. There are no hard strings attached to that.
Just build stuff with whatever you like. And don't get too much into the echo chamber that can be social media and tech. Just build stuff with whatever you like. That's the biggest lesson.
And not always like chasing the newest thing. Like, of course, if you have a project trying out new libraries, I think it's super important because you also want to like advance and evolve and see what maybe new things are about. But on the other hand, you want to get things done. So like switching out things for the third or fourth time is a bit tricky, especially if you don't know if they really serve the purpose you plan to.
Precisely. Yeah. It's always a matter of hitting the sweet spot of like knowing what to use and using the tools that you love, but also be on the lookout for things on the horizon that could be a possible innovation for your tech stack in the nearby future. There are always these new things going on, especially in AI land. That's what also I learned. Maybe it's interesting to mention, last year when we started, we had GPT 3.5, which was also pretty good. Its context window was a little bit limited. So I could explain what's been going on. Within CareerDeck, the idea is that you submit a job vacancy, whether it's a PDF or a URL, and then this whole chain of events will happen and generate all your content and help you write a preparation plan, resume, cover letter, etc. But the problem was that when I started and you would enter a URL, I would have this so-called web loader provided by LangChain, an AI LLM framework, and it would fetch the HTML and try to parse it and generate your content that originates from the original job vacancy. But sometimes this page content would be too long, so it exceeds the token context limit, and it would crash the entire application and you end up with nothing. So at first I thought, well, what should I do? Should I chunk the page and split it into the several parts and try to come up with like a strategy to summarize each of these chunks and then put them together? But in the end, you end up with more hallucinations than possible initially. So I thought, well, I give up. I'm not going to do this. I want people just to copy paste it and enter it in an input field. But then GPT-4 came out, which has a bigger context window. I think it was like 64K tokens or 128K, and it immediately solved my problems.
Perfect.
But then I ended up with another problem, because then the costs for using OpenAI's API and GPT-4 could exceed my the costs of generating all these contents. And I was like, should I use this? So right now, as we speak, I'm currently busy using another LLM, an open source. It's Llama 3. Just came out this week. It is quite on par with OpenAI's GPT-4 in the LLM arena benchmark. And I intend to use this rather than using the OpenAI API. But like with all things in AI, you have to experiment, you have to set things up. And we'll find out in the next episode where I'm the guest if this will succeed.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We probably also find it out on your Twitter and socials where we can follow you and you share updates over the project. But In the next episode, you'll tell us.
Tell how it went. Yeah. So one interesting problem I had to tackle, and that also ties in with what we're going to talk about, I think, was we provide a job interview simulator in as a module in CareerDeck. And this is quite hard because you need to do three things. You have to do the actual voice recognition. You have to transcribe whatever the user is telling to the AI assistant, so to say. This AI assistant needs to generate a response, which is text originating from an LLM. But you also need to generate audio on the fly. So there are three things happening, three problems I had to solve within CareerDeck to enable a user to talk to the browser and the browser to talk back. So the problem with these kind of things is that you want to make the conversation feel as natural as possible. It must feel like you're talking to a human. So this means low latency. You need to be able to stream your input and send it to the API and then ensure that as soon as OpenAI generates a voice file, it needs to stream it and then start talking. So initially I thought, all right, sure. I'll try to come up with an MVP, talk to the browser. The browser uses the first iteration of my MVP uses the voice recognition API, which is really good. It's able to transcribe your voice in a quite decent way. You don't need to check whether it made mistakes. It's pretty good. It was pretty good. But the problem was you needed to wait for it to finish transcribing it, and then it would send it back. So the latency of in this, it was super high. It was, I think, 3-4 seconds. So imagine talking to someone, imagine us having this conversation and then waiting 4 seconds before I would reply to whatever you had to say. So that didn't work out. It didn't really work out that well. So what I did then was use another API. I think it was called 11 Labs. And they have a pretty good API that was able to start streaming an audio response as soon as the response from the AI would start. So latency, I could decrease it to, I think, a second, second and a half.
That's pretty decent, down from like 4 seconds, yeah.
Yes, yeah, that's great. Still, you always know that you're talking to an AI, so expect some bumps along the way. But there was also, I needed to make the user or the client browser to know when is the AI talking? What updates are we getting out of a state of the server, so to say? So I did something really hacky. I think I returned a stream with Nuxt server routes and then set a custom header and use a Base64 encoded transcription of the AI response and send that back to the browser. So you would have an audio stream getting back to the client as well as the content written, but you had to mingle it together and it was not really nice.
Especially if it's like too long maybe, or yeah.
Too long. Character encoding, sometimes it will just completely breaks things. And I also wanted to provide the user with a ChatGPT-like experience. So if the user would click on show transcription, I would want it to make it show up just like you have in ChatGPT, like word by word, token by token. And that was such a big mess to do so. So after a while, I thought, what's the possible solution? Would it be WebSockets? And then I stumbled across a GitHub gist made by Daniel Rowe about nice. Server-side events. And I was like, this is it. This I can use to help the client get a better state recognition. And then I figured out, I can also use this to create a good and nice loading UX for the job applications that I'm fetching. So don't forget, I need to fetch actual live information from a web page. I need to generate structured output out of this using an AI tool. I need to generate a networking plan, an interview plan, a preparation plan, a resume, cover letter, and recommendations. All these things can run in parallel, but they take, 3-4 minutes. And there's no way I think you can catch off the state of what's going on the server route using traditional REST, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, probably you could put it to some kind of like in between cache or like Redis or KV or so. So there, there might be like some way to store that and update that and then like do some polling, but that doesn't sound that nice, let's say.
I think I tried to read more about this in my own time. And then, like you say, it's quite a hassle to set up. And with server-side events, you can just enable the client to receive automatic updates by using event source. And then you have a really nice way of transmitting the state of your backend.
And let's step in there straight away. So let's start one step earlier, because you mentioned service and events multiple times now. Maybe you can give a rundown just like very briefly what exactly service and events are, like just general overview.
Yeah, so it is a transmission or communication protocol that allows for real-time communication by streaming text-based data from a server to the client as soon as this becomes available on the server. So the client does not need to constantly pull the server updates, but the server transmits updates over the same connection between the client and itself. I think that is the gist for the backend. And you need to subscribe to an event source interface on the client. So I think it listens to these server updates.
So basically, the client, like any kind of client, could like hit a server out where the server would send service and events. They're like, okay, hey, I'm registered. Please, if there's an update, tell me. And then whenever there is something, then the server will just send it. And the client doesn't have to do, like, as I said, the polling, like every 30 seconds, every minute, every 10 seconds, get new information if there are some. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And that all works through HTTP, right? Like you don't need, it's the same protocol.
Yeah, you need to set content type to text event stream, and then it will encode your event data to the client. I think also you can listen for event messages, and then you can use whatever is in that message to optimistically update your UI or set state or whatever. In a certain way, it sort of resembles WebSockets, but it's not WebSockets.
That would be the next question. Like you mentioned also WebSockets earlier, like what would be the difference? Because I know WebSockets, of course, as well, and probably audiences use them too, like especially for like this, I don't know, classic like chat saying like, hey, send messages, receive messages, and so on, so on. So what is the difference between SSE and WebSockets there?
If you ask me, I'm honest, I have no idea. They conceptually look to me as this. I've never worked with WebSockets in great detail. My younger brother does.
Shout out here.
Yes, big shout out to my younger brother. And he also, by the way, came up with WebSockets as a possible solution. But I have to cheat. I have to look it up.
I don't use service and events regularly, but I use WebSockets quite a bit. And I think SSE are only not bidirectional. They're only one directional, right? Like the server can send info, but the client can't send info to the server that way, right? It's like more like a subscription.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah, that's also what ChatGPT tells me.
There we go.
But maybe this was interesting. I stumbled upon WebSockets on a numerous amount of occasions in my career, but that's more because certain technologies already implement WebSockets under the hood. For example, Supabase, you can listen to real-time updates, and that uses WebSockets under the hood. But I've never implemented WebSockets myself. And I think also when I came to think about possible solutions to this problem, WebSockets just didn't appeal to me at all. No.
Makes sense. By the way, talking about that, it's also now possible in Nitro, also for a while, but still, to implement WebSockets on the server side, linked to one of the videos and the docs in the description, because that's like fairly new. Let's say Vue.js Amsterdam new, so a couple months. Especially if you only need one direction, if you only like, okay, the server has to send it to the client, and then we're fine. Then you don't need like to spin up like a full duplex connection, do like this handshake and then upgrading process. Like that seems really, this doesn't seem that lightweight compared to just like, okay, I subscribe. If there's something, let me know.
I think, that's also the brilliant simplicity of server-side events, I would guess. I mean, there's no way for the clients to interfere with whatever the server is broadcasting. So,
exactly.
Good one. Yeah.
And so you said you're using service and events, and you found the gist of Daniel, which is then also linked in the show notes, if you still have it, but probably. Otherwise, we'll dig it up. And so you implemented them in Nitro itself then. Like you use them in a Nitro, like Nuxt server route.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. Using that. And then...
Okay. And did you have like any difficulties implementing that? Was it straightforward based on the gist or...
If I am honest, I think most of these solutions that are not explicitly mentioned in either the Nuxt or Vue docs, it will take a seasoned developer not a lot of time to implement it using Nitro, but I think you have to do a little bit of puzzling yourself initially. And that's another observation I have in my experience with Nuxt, Nitro. As someone who's not initiated with Vue ecosystem, for example, my younger brother, who's very much into React, when I asked him, hey, can you provide some comments on my code? Would you like to check out what I'm doing with CareerDeck? At first, he was a bit puzzled, like, hey, Nuxt, all right, cool. This is this meta framework for Vue. But how does Nitro and H3 all tie in with this? So as soon as you start to understand that Nuxt server routes are backed and powered by Nitro and H3, you'll probably find out very quickly how to implement things like server-side events yourself easily. But I can imagine it might take a little bit more time for those who are not among us in our world of Vue.
Understandable, especially I think with the fragmentation, which it's not really fragmentation, but like with the sectioning of functionalities in different packages in, for example, on.js, it's, I think in a way it's really helpful for like making it available to whole JavaScript community and sharing that among different frameworks and making it easier to test and to isolate. But I see the point on the other hand, if you jump into it, then it might be a bit daunting saying, okay, I have all these different packages and there's Nitro, but there's also H3, how they are related. And then what is Radix 3 and this and that. So I definitely understand that this is a little barrier if you hit that the first time, or as you said, Nuxt and Nitro, how do they work together? What is the Nitro? What is Nuxt? Like I've experienced it multiple times as well when doing consultancy and explaining. And also that's why I also did a video about that saying, okay, these are the two parts, and here's where they work together. But I hope, for example, with that problem, we can change something with the new proposed default project structure in Nuxt 4, where we have the server folder outside of the app folder. So say, okay, these are like the two separate parts, like the front and the back end, and they still work together doing SSR. But other than that, like you can just take the server folder and more or less deploy it as a Nitro standalone.
That's great. Yeah. All right. Is this proposed directory structure, is this a definitive proposal? Will it be implemented for sure? Or is it something that you cannot share details on?
There is an issue about that. So if anybody has some opinion on that, please share that along also in the show notes down below, because it's planned for Nuxt 4 and we were also thinking about naming. So if anyone has an opinion on that, then please feel free to share that. Very important for us is it won't be like a huge change, because first of all, you can already do that more or less already. You can say in Nuxt, you can set a source directory and all your source files on there. The only difference is that the server can also be outside now. And if you don't want it, you don't have to use it. That's always the nice part. We also will have backwards compatibility. So if you have that like flat structure all in one folder, that will still be fine. But yeah, as I said, it's worth checking out, also a bit of the reasoning. And there is still discussion of how to name the folder. It's not server, but right now it's called app. But naming things is hard. And there were some suggestions because kind of the server is also part of the app. It's a bit tricky. So if you have any amazing name for that, your chance to shine there too. But
awesome.
With regards to Nitro as well, I also often get like the question, how does it compare to like other server frameworks? I mean, for like, I don't know, Connect or Express, which are also more bare bone, I think it's a bit easier to say. But then it starts with like, okay, we have Nest.js, but sometimes also say, okay, how does it work like Next.js server routes? Or how then even going further away from the JavaScript ecosystem of like Fastify and Hono and so on, maybe also saying, oh yeah, how does it compare to Laravel? And I think they're giving that Nitro and A3 have like a different model of like, okay, more composability, what the front end has too. But also given that it's quite young compared to like, I don't know how old Express feels like forever. Also like a Laravel that's on also for forever. There's still like some, let's say some convenience modules up that should be there at some point. Or what's an easier start than like building a silver bullet is some kind of cookbook saying, hey, this is how you can set up WebSockets. This you can set how I set up server side events. Here's how you can do, I don't know, some logging. It's a bit of an easier introduction saying, oh yeah, server part, cool. Here you read more. Here are 50 examples. There's something that fits. Awesome.
Yeah.
So I think that would help a lot too. And like now with Nitro and A3 having doc size that can be edited, I think that will also come in the near future.
Yeah, I agree. I think, providing your developers or users or people with interest in Nuxt, H3 or Nitro or whatever, show them what is possible. Show them, I mean, we have all the nice goodies in Nuxt and in Nitro. It would be a shame to get all the possible solutions for your problems buried underneath the whole mountain of technicalities. So what I really like about the Nuxt docs is that they're very thorough, they're very well written. Sometimes I'm missing a bit like, okay, what can you do with this? Same goes for H3, like, oh, KV storage, it's awesome, but if you don't,
if you've never heard of this
before and you're like, okay, sure, someone has made this, has written this library, but why should I care?
Yeah, fair point.
So, Nuxt is awesome. And so I was wondering, do you as an insider in the Nuxt core team, does Nuxt have the ambition to become the next Laravel or the next Nest.js? Is that, I mean, Nuxt is a batteries included framework. You can progressively enhance your app with all these nice goodies. But is the ultimate goal, you think, to become a major competitor to the other major frameworks like Nest and Laravel?
So my personal opinion on that, that doesn't reflect the opinion of the team, just a little disclaimer. I think what I really enjoy using Nuxt and also coming from Laravel eventually is the simplicity of like, okay, you can just put things in, they work, you like file system-based routing and everything. But of course, these are what lots of meta frameworks have. And I think now that things are also like server and client are moving closer and closer together, we talk on the performance side of like, oh yeah, partial hydration and server components and so on. And I think if we have a strong and, like I say, powerful framework that can give us the flexibility on the front end and all the convenience and the options on the back end, but like making them accessible to us, but don't enforce them on us, let's say, that would be pretty sweet. And I think Nuxt and Nitro are in a good spot there. Of course, it's a bit more difficult given that Nitro and all the UnJS packages are planning to be runtime agnostic. So it is, of course, let's say more time consuming to not just say like, okay, it's Node and that's it. But also, oh yeah, we have, I don't know, 14 plus runtimes right now. And ideally, things should work everywhere. And otherwise, you have to mark them as experimental. Like, for example, WebSockets don't work on certain vendors because, okay, this is just simply not possible technically, or how do we have a long-living connection there, and so on and so on. And of course, we're also in touch with them, figuring out a solution if there's something possible. But I don't think of it necessarily as competition, because what like a Nuxt has in the front end is not necessarily what Laravel has in the front end, given that it's... No. Of course, you can use like Inertia, let's say, which also can use Vue or React under the hood in Laravel and say, I write my things only PHP, and then they're in the front end, back end, and fine, or like Livewire or whatever. But I think ideally we would have something that's really unifying both pieces. And I think Nuxt is going a pretty good way there. So I wouldn't be surprised seeing more convenience around that, seeing more more like batteries included if you need them, and still stick with composability. So still saying, if you don't use something, it's not in the bundle, it's it will be tree shaken, it won't hurt performance, and so on and so on.
Yeah. No, that's a good one. Yeah, very thorough and insightful response from your view. Nice. Yeah. I mean, of course, you can't have everything. So I'm currently looking at the Nest.js docs, and you see all these things like queuing and all these things. And if it's, I would rather have Nuxt having less feature ship, but all work good and have all these possibilities to host it wherever you want, rather than having it being broken and not working at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never half as a thing, always whole as a thing.
But then it might be a smaller thing. Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
but I mean, for example, let's say queuing, let's go back to storage that you mentioned before. Like, okay, then there was a new UnJS package called UnStorage. Then we had all the integrations with the different drivers, and they can still add more and more to that. So I think especially with these things, if there is the need for that, and then if there is time for that, that's the other thing. Because
yeah.
I mean, all the maintainers are busy, being it Daniel, Puya, anyone else from any of the core teams, right?
You have to allocate time and resources, and some things are less important than other things.
It's also like, it's not only building new things. Of course, also the big thing is maintaining the old ones, right? Like bug fixes and so on. So in the end, important things, they definitely will come at some point. I know, like, Harlan was thinking about some queuing package also when he was on the episode, saying like, oh yeah, that would be amazing, and he's still working on that. I saw and pinged him even on Twitter recently on another post, which is then also linked down there. Maybe there's already more info there. So all in all, I think it's more about, okay, UnJS has some packages that you can use in any kind of project. It doesn't have to be Nuxt, Nitro.
That's true.
A plain Node.js project or a very small Cloudflare worker or whatever. And ideally, we, like, in Nuxt, we, and also like Nitro, you have a nice way of using them if you need them.
True. Yeah. That's very much true. Yeah. And what do you think? We were talking about all the nice goodies from Nuxt and UnJS H3. Well, how do you see the role that Vue takes in the Vue ecosystem if Nuxt has all these good things shipped with it? I mean, what I mean is that, why would a developer start a new Vue project and opt for using vanilla Vue, but having to set up all these things yourself, having to set up the router, having set up your own state, having maybe you also want to create your own custom fetch instance? But why would you do that if there is Nuxt with all these nice things and composables built in?
Yep.
Is there a role for Vue if Nuxt is, I wouldn't say better, but has more things included? I tend to see Vue as a Swiss pocket knife, and Nuxt is an even bigger Swiss pocket knife because there's so many more things built in. What do you think about this?
Of course, I'm a bit biased there.
Yeah.
So it's, let me start with a bit of a bigger picture. I think it's interesting that, for example, React says, hey, don't use React without a framework anymore. I don't necessarily think that's, like, for the Vue ecosystem, I personally wouldn't go that way, mainly because one thing that helped Vue gaining a lot of traction is that you can say, okay, I have a script tag in any kind of application, can be just plain HTML, can be like Laravel, Django, and so on. I smash Vue in there and I can just start using it. It might not have single file components in that way. It might not have the best IDE support, but it will work. And I can, let's say, replace jQuery or do like tiny things with it. So a lot of use flexibility. And you can't do that with Nuxt, of course. If you don't build your whole application in Nuxt, that's tricky. Or at least a part of it, and then like proxy it out or whatever. So you kind of just like slowly like sprinkle Nuxt on top of things. And I think it's really nice with Vue that you have that option. And When I was talking about Petit Vue in previous conferences, I was always wondering how many people use like Vue in a script tag. And there are quite some. Like, I've seen so many projects by now doing that, even if it's just like, okay, at some point we want to rebuild the front end, but we can't right now. We are more or less stuck on the LAMP stack. Maybe our people prefer that, but we still need something for, well, the JavaScript in the front. And instead of saying, okay, I want to have some kind of vendor lock-in by choosing like an inertia live wire or so on, saying, okay, I have to stick with exactly that, I just plug in Vue and go with that. And in these cases, I think Vue is a perfectly fine tool. But if you start with like, okay, I have a green field. Should I use Vue or Nuxt? Then, okay, my take is easy on that.
I think that's
also an important part. Maybe people are afraid of using Nuxt because they're knowing, okay, Nuxt is used for server-side rendering or maybe static site generation, but I don't need either. I don't need anything. I just want to build a plain old single-page application. And you can do that too. It's pretty easy because you just generate one side, which is an index HTML. Server-side rendering is off, and then you have your SPA. And whenever you say, okay, I want to switch maybe server-side rendering on for certain pages, generate some landing pages in the front, or maybe want Nitro as a back-end server running as well, you can easily do that. So I see the point of you saying, we can just use Nuxt for like greenfield projects. The other problem with that, I think, is the learning. Because if people know Vue, it's really easy. You can start like, okay, they know Vue router, they know Vue, it's all good. Not too much magic around that. And you don't have to learn how data fetching in Nuxt works. Things are a bit, let's say, they might be less well-structured sometimes, depends also. Mm-hmm. But they're also less magical, and sometimes they're easy to grasp, especially for new people, because then they only have to learn Vue, and they don't have to learn Vue and how Nuxt behaves. From that perspective, I get that too. And if you say, like, I don't know, file system-based routing, well, there is Unplugin, also coming from Unjs, funnily, Anthony Fu's main credit for that. There is a plugin to say, okay, Unplugin, I think Vue router, Unplugin to actually enable type pages and file system loading and so on in Vue projects. So parts of the, let's say, quote unquote, Nuxt magic, you can already have in your Vue projects. Or same with like auto imports and stuff.
Yeah.
So in some degree,
there's always a way to get these things working in Vue that originate from Nuxt. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I didn't know about this Unplugin router package, by the way, but I'm looking at it.
Yeah, look into it. It's really cool. That's why, like, you can have some of these goodies already. And I also understand people saying, like, okay, we all know Vue. We have to ship features. We can't rebuild everything in Nuxt. And of course, for like a new, also smaller project, it makes sense. Like, okay, let's get into it. Let's see what we can get, especially if you also know already, I might need a server. I might need this and that. But even if you don't, in my opinion, it makes sense to bet on the meta framework, but I can also understand people who don't. I would just encourage people giving it a try. And then I think very important, like I say that almost every meetup I go to, every conference, if you start using Nuxt, and it applies to any kind of like library or framework, you have that unique view of being like a newbie. And that's pretty cool because then you know nothing and we can improve based on your feedback saying, okay, this was not really understandable. Or like your brother coming from React Universe saying, oh, I have no idea where to go now. I don't know how like Nitro and Nuxt and H3, how they work together. And these pieces are missing for us who work with that on a daily basis because we have all that knowledge already, right? So we could improve the documentation and the learning process and the onboarding based on that feedback. And I think that would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
So share that with us, everyone. Send me a DM, send right in the Nuxt Discord, hit any of the team members up because we want to take that serious. We want to improve that as well. So more people have an easier time being onboarded.
Yeah, I think those are very valid points. And I also remember like, hey, of course you people like working with Vue if they're working with Laravel. I think that ties in very nicely.
Yes.
And there's, of course, I remember now as we're talking about it, I was on a client a couple of years ago and they had both Vue and Nuxt 2. Yeah, Vue 2, Nuxt 2 in the same project, one for one product, one for another product. Both were dashboards, I believe. There were many more people on the team that knew about Vue and not that many people who ever worked with Nuxt. So, yeah. I think it depends on where you're working at and what everybody is using and what's their preference. And all in fairness, I mean, it's not that it will take you much more time to get up and running with vanilla Vue if you're coming from Nuxt. You probably know how to set a Vue router yourself or implement things that are only in Nuxt present.
Well, at least you can like figure it out, right? Like step by step. Or worst case, you do it yourself.
Yeah.
But once again, I think the state where more and more people trying not to even say, like, okay, look, this is overkill for my project. I just need a very simple tiny app. I get it. Sure. You don't have to, but it gives you lots of flexibility because, and also I've seen it multiple times. Oh yeah, there's a view application. Now they need partially server-side rendering, or now they need static site generation. And then starting to move everything over is tedious.
Yes. Yes, that is. That is.
Yeah. All right. I think these were some like really, really nice questions, really nice answers as well. So I have one more question. Patrick, where can people follow you? Where can people follow you more about your project? Where can people follow you more about updates with regards to where you maybe give your next talk? Who knows? Or
Wow. Well, if you would like to follow me on the app formerly known as Twitter, X, you can follow me on my Twitter handle. It's regxparser.
It's a cool one.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know how I came up with it. I think it was in my beginning of my developer career, and I thought, hey, this is cool. But you can follow me there. I'm also organizing a couple of Vue meetups in Amsterdam the coming year. You'll find me for sure on Vue.js Amsterdam, where the brilliant Alexander Lichter is also there.
Every now and then. Yep. Since 2018 or 19. Yeah.
Always. You're always there. Yeah. If you would like to check out what I'm working on, you can check out careerdeck.nl, which soon will be moved to careerdeck.ai. I think I already bought the domain, or did I? Well,
otherwise, do it now. Quick.
Yeah, otherwise people buy it and will squat my domain.
Oh,
but
no.
You can check out. My aim is to launch by the end of June. And yeah, let me know what you think of the project. I'm always curious to hear people's opinions and what they think of career and personal development and AI.
Okay, then, yeah, I would say thanks a lot for sharing your knowledge, for coming on the podcast, and we're all super curious where the journey goes. We'll definitely have you on board one more time, giving a little update how things went, how things go, and yeah, it's always nice to see people using like Vue and Nuxt in real life with some experience, how they use things, and to learn more things around that. So Thanks a lot, Patrick, for coming. Talk to you very soon, definitely in person as well. I'll swing by. And that's for that week's episode of Deja Vue. So see you next week, everybody, where we have another very curious topic lined up. And mentioned Vue.js Amsterdam conference will also come in a few episodes together with some interesting releases. So stay tuned and see you all very soon.